Ladies and gentlemen, what is up? It is Tuesday night. It's time for episode 42 of Inside the Game. It's May 15th, 2012. I'm DJ Wheat, joined by X-Xpain user EG Idra and EG In Control. And we have got a great show planned for you tonight, kicking off with an in-depth analysis and feature piece by EG Idra about why Diablo 3 is the next esport and why he feels like it is going to crush StarCraft 2. So why don't we just jump right now? I'm just kidding. What's up, guys?
What's up, dude?
It's been a wild week, man. Like, teams have disbanded. Whole halves of teams have gotten sliced down the middle. We've got upcoming tournaments coming. D3 dropped in the middle of all this. And it's been crazy all around. How's it going, Pain User? How you been?
Pretty good, man. I'm on the tail end of a straight gaming bender. Just playing Diablo 2 for the last 48 hours, pretty much. Off and on with StarCraft.
I've been up for a while as well, so I'm joining you.
Yeah.
I'm joining you in that. But before the D3 launch yesterday at Scoots' house, all I did was play StarCraft 2 ladder for like 5 hours. It was pretty
Yeah, I squeezed like 30 or 40 ladder games in the last 48.
It's good stuff. Idra, what's up, man?
I'm like everyone else, that's just normal for me. No interest at all in Diablo. We actually played the beta. I think I played it with the Muslim, a couple other people in the house, I forget who. And it's just like the most boring, retarded thing. You sit there clicking. I don't get it.
Well, I mean, technically you're just clicking in StarCraft. No, I'm just kidding. I won't go there with you, Greg.
There's a lot more clicking.
There's a lot more intelligent clicking.
Winning argument.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, it's like the type of game that you just play when you have absolutely nothing else to do. It's just mindless clicking.
When you're like, need an excuse for a new mouse, play through a Diablo series, and you'll need to replace it after that.
Very true.
Jeff. What's up, brother?
What's up, man? Yeah, there's a lot to talk about. You're right. I mean, Eclipsia kind of severing off some people. Complexity just announced losing Katz and Desper.
Yeah, that's like within the last hour.
Oh, really? Yeah, I didn't see that.
Free agents over in Peru.
I don't know, man.
OGS disbanding.
I don't think they're free agents.
Oh.
No, man.
Inside scoop?
No, I don't have an inside scoop, but like, come on, man. Like, what's the most obvious thing that could happen?
They're moving in together to become lovers?
To become Root? Again, maybe?
You think that's the most obvious answer?
I really do.
I don't think that's financially feasible. Like,
yeah.
You're not going to... Katz and Truby together, they're not going to get a set of sponsors and stuff.
I don't know, man.
I don't know. Katz could market himself and pick up sponsors, I think. He's like one of the few people that might be able to actually do that.
Not enough to like fund a house and drag Drewby along with him, though.
I like Katz. Katz is a friend of mine, but while he had an entire team that was doing one of the best performances in all of North America, they couldn't get sponsors. So it would be kind of hard for me to believe now that Kiwi-Kaki's retired. Drewby's been...
Right.
Drewby's been kind of quiet, not to diss on him at all, but it's like... he's been moving around and just kind of doing different things, so I haven't really seen him in the scene. Other than winning the MLG qualifier for early this year, that was pretty freaking sweet. And then Katz, because of his move, no one's heard anything from him for the last like month and a half.
Yeah, I mean, he's been busy.
Another thing is there's a pretty big difference between being like marketable, like Katz is entertaining, people like watching the stream and stuff.
Right.
There's a big difference between that and actually being able to sell yourself to a sponsor and get someone to give you money. And like, if you don't have a lot of business experience, there's a reason they were as successful as they were and couldn't get any sponsorship or support or anything. Like, they don't have business people there. They have a bunch of poker and StarCraft players.
Yeah, I think it's tough too if you don't have like the infrastructure of a team with managers who are actively looking for sponsors. You know, when it's a group of guys doing a homegrown thing, it's always a million times more difficult, I think, to pick up sponsors.
They have to have a plan, though. You know, like, I'm sure it's like a contractual thing. Like, I'm sure, because there's actually people re-signing right now and trying to extend contracts. It's part of the reason why Complexity came out with saying they re-signed Ryze and Minigun as well. Most contracts end at the end, like in December, but there's a handful of contracts like Thorzane, where it's around this time. But also, this is about this next like 3-4 month stretch is when a lot of teams secure their people so they don't go into the end of the year. Where they then get shopped around, you know, like I can actually tell you, like, EG's coming up on those discussions, because nobody wants to see a Complexity Idra or, like, VVV Huck. That'd be sweet, though.
That would be a good home for Chris.
Eclipsia the Muslim. Be strange. That'd be weird.
Oh, that's awesome.
So these teams are starting to talk right now, so... What I'm guessing happened is that Cass was like, hey, I don't want to put too much into it, but I'm sure that the Complexity was kind of like, you guys, we want to offer you this much, which isn't necessarily a raise, and Cass and Drewby are like, actually, we're capable of probably getting more, so they probably went out elsewhere. That would be my guess, but I don't actually have any information to so that's
literally
my ass. Like,
someone just, did point me to Kiwi Cocky's Twitter, which is currently found at Root Kiwi Cocky. So
is that a recent change, or has it just always been that?
You know what? I don't know.
I wouldn't be surprised if it's just it was
maybe
that.
Maybe it has always been
StarCraft
that.
Seriously, because as far as I know, he has quit StarCraft. He's just doing poker.
Yeah, and that's what I heard as well. Yeah.
And
Destiny
when he quit
doesn't have
StarCraft,
a team.
He like dinked and donked on the game under a Root tag, and it wasn't to bring back Root.
It's
just
always
they have
been
good
that.
Memories there, and
it's
why not?
Been
fun.
I really love this graphic that I saw the other day, and I think that you guys will love it as well. It is a 1v1 OBS point of view at what the league system is like. And I don't know if you guys actually tune into the stream and watch it. But this is like, you know, so these guys that watch your stream, like how they see the various leagues from Grandmaster to Bronze. Yeah, if you guys didn't see this,
is that shit graphic?
It's totally amazing.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Can you link it in?
Fair. Yeah,
it just says everything's shit, Greg, except for top Grandmasters.
It says top 8 Grandmasters is fair. Grandmasters is average. Masters below average. Diamond shit. Platinum shit. Gold shit. Silver shit. Bronze shit.
You know what's funny to illustrate that, though, is, like, if I play on the Korean server or if I go to Europe and I play a couple games where I'm Masters because I don't spend time there, every minute I check, like, in between games or whatever, there's always 10 to 15 people that are like, he's fucking Masters. I knew he was eventually going to be fucking terrible and just start not even qualifying for Grandmasters. What kind of fucking professional can't get Grandmasters? And everyone's always like, it's on Europe, dude. Relax. He's played 15 games. And then they get kind of quiet. And then another guy comes in. He's fucking Masters? Jesus Christ. It's like, oh. Come on. Calm down, Internet.
It's shit anyway, so. Wait, no. I don't think Masters is shit. Oh, Masters, that's below average, Jeff, so.
Below average.
Below average.
That's pretty positive, actually. Yeah.
As an outlook. Actually, the biggest thing for StarCraft related that's come out of Diablo 3 is the fact that Battle.net was actually down as a result of another influx of people that came to play.
Really?
Yeah. People couldn't log in.
Pretty funny, because they were actually advertising how this is like the most pre-sales they've ever made in their life. And then they're like, oh shit, it was real.
Yeah, I thought that was funny too. It's like they can...
What's that, Greg?
All those people actually want to play the game. What a shocker.
Yeah.
Have to log in and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of weird that they can, like, track all the sales numbers, and then they're blown away by how many people are trying to log in. It's like, really?
George, this is a little crazy, George. I don't know what all these red lights mean, but fucking A, something's wrong. Yeah, it's pretty insane. So we've got plenty to talk about tonight that I don't think we need to go into too much about it, right? Like, everyone's... Right? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, it's not relevant, really, I don't think.
What the fuck are you drinking, Pain User?
So...
coconut water.
Oh, my God.
It's good stuff, man.
Everyone in San Francisco.
Because your ancestors were tall enough to reach up to the top of coconut trees.
honest to goodness, it, like, someone told me a long time ago that a lot of athletes use it, and it apparently has... all of the electrolytes in the human body. Two more than Gatorade, I think. I like it. Tastes good.
That sounds questionable.
It has all the electrolytes in the really body. I think you're misquoting that. Like, there has to be another way to say that.
We're going to start watering our plants with it soon, Jeff. Just chill the fuck out, man.
I don't know about that. It's pretty expensive.
Everyone.
That would be super hippie. That'd be awesome.
Oh, God. That's great. So on the lines of some of the, you know, we were talking about the root stuff, OGS rumors of OGS shutting down, which was, you know, definitely a name that carried a lot of weight in the early days of StarCraft II.
Yeah.
And slowly saw some shifting, you know, Nada was a part of it, MC, you know, certainly all the Team Liquid association that was with it. But as the rumors are sort of saying it, and apparently this is like the last picture. This is how it was listed on Reddit. The last picture of the OGS house before the fucking bulldozer just comes and knocks that shit down. No, it's
like a white guy in a suit with a construction hat on, too. So it's just like
smoking a cigarette.
Capitalism coming in and just crushing the corporate
room. Yeah, just laughing.
Time for you to make more money, children.
But it is kind of, I mean, it's like kind of a piece of history of StarCraft II.
It's sad. For me, this represents a few things. Like, first and foremost, it kind of shows the state of StarCraft II, where, like, it's not enough to just be a team. It's not enough to just win. Like, Supernova's been successful. You know, Hero coming out of that house, MC coming out of that house. You have to actually market your players. You have to do more than just go to tournaments to get those sponsors and to get yourself the money so you can keep doing that. Like, MC was kind of a one-man media show. Like, he brings attention. He's fucking exciting. He's an amazing player. He's the complete package. He's one of the top-tier StarCraft II players in terms of, like, the absolute complete package. And then after he got sniped, which kind of segues into my next point, like, how terrible is it when, in my opinion, when these teams do this partnership where it's like, yeah, you can, we'll, like, lend out two or three of our top players to your brand, and then they're kind of surprised when eventually that brand is like, you know, we're actually paying you all this money. What if we paid you a little bit more and you just kind of became ours? What player is going to be like, no, I'd like to go back to that team that doesn't pay me any money because I don't need money to live.
And so, you get introduced to international competitions. You're not limiting yourself necessarily to just GSL.
SK snipes MC. SK, I would say, rattled the cage for Nada, who left, and then Complexity grabbed him up. And then after that, it's like Supernova and who else? Finn gets a lot of attention.
SDC.
But he's not an MC, and Supernova's not an MC. These aren't guys who not only just win, but then also stand up on stage in like a fucking monster costume and shake their head and stuff.
Murloc.
Like that, you know?
It was a Murloc.
Yeah.
I don't know about that, because like the MC leaving is kind of understandable because they had the partnership with SK. He's really into the foreign competition. He's a smart guy. He sees a lot of potential in that. But then Nada leaving. Like, if Nada wanted to follow MC or if SK was offering him a lot, I think he would have just gone to SK. The fact that he left separately and then went to Complexity makes me kind of wonder about OGS's role in the whole thing. Like, if they weren't treating, like, Jace weren't giving them enough money or just weren't treating players well or whatnot.
Well, I mean,
losing
didn't
focus,
yeah,
it's not usually exclusive, though. Like, that's it's de-emphasizing my point. Maybe you're right. Maybe it wasn't just that SK rattled the cage, but rather that OGS was underwhelming in their support of their players. I think you could be right on that.
I think if it was SK's doing, Nada probably would have gone to SK. Or maybe they just weren't satisfied with him, but he's a pretty big draw, but not big to the point where he charges superstar money. So like, I think if they wanted to get him, they could have. So the fact that he just left and went to another team kind of makes me think that at least some of the responsibility is on OGS.
What do you guys think of the rumors that Huck is the reason? You can see in this picture that Huck is actually trying to slap Jinro in this picture while everyone else is throwing up peace signs. He obviously means war.
It's actually sad for Huck because this is where Huck, quote unquote, grew up with his skill. Like,
exactly,
Sending him off to Korea to become a better player. Like, he was already pretty good, but when he went to Korea, that's where he became the Huck that we all know and love, the guy that is capable of winning tournaments.
Yeah.
And this is his rock that's getting rattled, so we here at EG are actually kind of scrambling to figure out what he's going to do, too.
Well, and although there's like several Liquid players in that scenario as well, right? Is it Jinro there?
Hey, Pro and Jinro are both already over there, and TLO's like on the way. I think he gets there in a day or two or something. So, I'm not sure what they're all going to do, but they don't have a house anymore.
Hmm. Wow.
I'm sure Liquid can put something together for those guys, though.
But this is like the house that most of them have been in since the beta, pretty much.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a really big change for all of them, particularly Jinro, who's been there the entire time.
It is a bit sad, and we'll see exactly what is going to be happening with all that.
What do we know about like the inner workings of the OGS management?
I don't know that we do. I mean,
yeah, I mean,
Spunky.
It's owned by Spunky. The Wind is the coach. They have a few other coaches. Spunky funded most of it out of his own pocket early on. They got some sponsorships. I don't know how big they are. I don't know. Not too much else is very public.
Yeah. I think like it's super important to have some, like Jeff was saying, business-minded people, but like people who are actively just trying to make an independent business and use the players to market them and promote their business.
Yeah.
I think there's a big difference between that and like managers who are just kind of managing the players and just waiting for sponsorships to come along and then build something off that. Well, I mean, they have to actively be creating a business.
I mean, like, let's be honest. This has happened just last week, in a Western team scenario, because I believe that this is what Thorzane was hoping to get out of Mouse Sports and something that he knew that EG was going to be able to deliver on, because it's something that they're very, very good at, and you guys are very, very good at, and you have the talent and personality to be able to do all that, and you know that plays a big role in it as well. I don't know that it's necessarily just about finding those sponsorships anymore and that just being it. How else are you going to sustain the team? You still have to create a business out of it, you know?
Yeah.
We've been on this pedestal a few times. Like, I have very little sympathy for a lot of, like, obviously I'm very happy with the Thorzane situation, but I would be critical of Mouse and say they have one of, if not the best, foreigner teams, or at least
absolutely
teams in the scene.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I don't see shit in terms of player interactions. Like, Hasselhoff is actually an amazing host, an amazing caster. Where is Mouse sending him to tournaments and saying, I want him to wear that jersey, or let's have him stream like a discussion with ex-player, let's have him interview. I had this talk with a lot of the German guys at Alternate Attacks, and they were kind of like, well, Alternate Attacks is very German-centric, so all they really care about is their German sponsors. And my answer was always, great, appease the German sponsors, but what does it hurt to make everyone else happy or give them exposure as well? And teams don't really seem to think along those lines. And there's always like the comment like, well, they should be spending all their time practicing. And of course, I have this like big newsflash for you. I don't actually spend 7 hours a day doing media stuff, right? It actually takes very little time to do anything media-related, but it immortalizes you and it makes you so valuable that even in your lows or in your highs, you're either growing your career or at least plateauing. You're not dying, which is what's happening to a lot of these players and teams.
People kind of overrate like how valuable it actually is to win. Like, you see all these Korean players who come over to foreign tournaments and they can actually win them. Like, Squirtle gets second, Alive gets first at IPL4. No one really cares about them. They're not all that marketable. They have a fan base, but it's not gigantic. And part of that's just because Alive's already on Fnatic, which is a foreign team to begin with, which helps. But really, all these players are incredibly skilled, very talented. They can win tournaments, but no one really cares that much because they can't relate to them. They don't see them. They don't see their personality. They don't see them outside of the game. And skill only gets you that much fandom unless you're like ridiculously, amazingly good, win every other tournament you enter. And there's not really people like that in StarCraft 2. It's just you don't have that much consistency out of anyone. So if you don't do that other stuff, you're not going to get money. That's what you can sell to sponsors. That's what people care about. That's what everything actually has to be focused on. Winning tournaments just gets you the attention that then draws everything to all the media stuff.
Yeah. So one thing I found kind of peculiar was that Thorzane was mentioning on a lot of media, and not Mouse-related media, but like he was on Live on 3, he was on Kings of 10. I know Scoots was kind of grilling him about Mouse and what he thought about the organization, and Thorzane was pretty vocal and outspoken about the fact that Mouse wasn't really promoting their players and wasn't really doing everything that they could be doing. And I'm surprised Mouse didn't try and, you know, I don't know if it was a foregone conclusion at that point or if it was still up in the air whether Thorzane was going to join EG or not, but I'm surprised they didn't try and, you know, do something.
A lot of foreign teams are just, they're not good at that. I don't know if maybe they have a different business model or something. Maybe something else works for them. But relative to EG, it just seems like no one really even tries to market their players or put anything out there.
Team Liquid, like, to a certain extent, I think.
That's true.
Yeah, Team Liquid does as well. But it's always been easy in Team Liquid.
They also have their website, which makes everything so much easier for them.
Oh, absolutely.
But, like, I remember when Mouse got the new named sponsor, the CC in their name, and we were all talking about it, and we were like, what is CC? We don't know what that is. We don't know what it stands for. And
called
to, like,
card counters at one time.
Yeah.
It's card coaches.
To actually have a sponsor that pays you enough to get naming rights and then not promote them at all, have people in your community who doesn't even know what they are, that's a failure by Mouse. And a lot of teams are like that.
It's, you know, a lot of it is growing pains too, right? Because there was never necessarily enough money for people to quickly realize, like, what the proper model was for making this all work. And so I think that means that a lot of people are sort of going through that right now. Even though some of these teams have been ridiculously, you know, in it for the long haul for a long time. Like, Mouz has been around for a very long time, dude. They were tournament winners in Counter-Strike as well. Look at a company like Dignitas. You could argue that they don't necessarily market their players as much as others, but
they're starting to, though. They
win shit all the time. It might not be StarCraft II. But they're, like, constantly winning shit. FIFA. Constantly winning driving shit. I mean, they are constantly always a team that is out there and winning. And that winning is their method of marketing.
And I think they're taking note of all this as well, because Dignitas is also stepping up their media a lot. They've been doing interviews with all kinds of people and posting all kinds of interesting stuff on their site. So it seems like they're really stepping it up, too. And
what do you guys think about individual? Like, for someone mentioned in chat, Grubby, you know, like, Grubby's kind of done a pretty good job.
Well,
I mean, not everyone has the same legacy.
Yeah, and he sort of already had that whole thing pre-existing, right? He was already sort of his personal enterprise, you know?
To be honest, he's made some missteps. Like, he had that reputation going in. He had everything laid out for him. Like, he was a legend at Warcraft 3 and just absolutely huge, gigantic fan base. And so he looks at that and says, okay, I'm going to try and take advantage of this, which is smart, and makes his own team, his own thing, gets his own sponsorship from SteelSeries, and then just doesn't make it successful. He loses the sponsorship. So, like, he's done some good things, and it's really smart of him to try and take advantage of the position he has. But at the same time, it hasn't completely worked out. He's done some things, just they weren't the right decision.
Yeah. And, I mean, it's going to be that much more difficult to be an individual, right, and have a team
really,
of people, you know, that are going to help you. It may seem like the right direction, but I still feel like the team, you know, the team foundation is just too strong right now for.
And I would just, I want to, like, I can see this conversation winding down, but I just want to leave, like, this is such an actual important point, because even selfishly as an EG guy, like, as good as we do at marketing, we actually benefit from other teams doing a good job as well, because then it raises the ante in the entire scene, and there's more to be had for everyone. Right now, when a sponsor looks at EG, they're like, well, shit, they've already got, what, 20 sponsors, something like that. Like, I can't actually get on there. But then they look at these other teams, and I'm going to, let's throw it out there, like a Quantic. I don't know who the fuck sponsors Quantic. Complexity. I know that Soundblaster sponsors Complexity because they do a pretty good job of getting that out there. But after that, I have no fucking idea. I have no idea, and like, if I'm looking at those teams, I'm like, who do I want to give $100,000 to and attach my brand to them? I don't know that I give it to them. And the easiest, in my opinion, the easiest part of this entire thing, like, winning is the hardest part. Making sure your players are representing you well and doing well, that's difficult. Like, that's tough stuff. Paying them, making money to pay them, that's all hard. The easiest thing ever is to give some intern the job of managing Twitter, making Facebook fan pages, getting interviews for players, giving them exposure, casting gigs, reminding them to do things like drink from a Red Bull or Monster, if that's what you do. Hold, you know, like, use your gear and then, like, attribute some of your success to said gear. One of the things I see on Twitter all the time is people tweet at me, hey, I just picked up a sensei because they support and control. I retweet that. And then other people see that. And that actually works, by the way. That's actually a really big deal. But the fact that individual players and teams don't emphasize that means that we're going to see OGSs close down. We're going to see Quantic eventually. You know, who knows? Like, if they didn't have these Google guys step in, what happens then?
Yeah.
Who's their sponsors?
Yeah.
I think they have Razer. I have no idea who else.
Everybody has Razer, though.
Yeah, I mean, Razer can't be, like, their primary sponsor. Well, they might be, actually. I don't know. Maybe they have, like,
that's the only one I can think of.
I think Razer.
But just judging by how many teams Razer is involved with and sponsors, I can't imagine that Razer. Well,
some sponsors like that have tiers of sponsorship. Like for the lesser teams, so let's give them gear, and then for their actual big teams, they'll give them, you know, an actual sponsorship funding and whatnot.
Yeah, I agree with Jeff though. I mean, it's like it seems fairly straightforward and simple for teams to just focus on it a little bit more, you know, and just devote resources towards that.
It's almost to the extent that I feel like there has to be something that we don't know, something that's actually been successful for Complexity and Mouse and all the other teams that have been around for a long time, because like, it seems very, very intuitive. It seems like this is what's obviously drawing a lot of attention, this is what makes money, but for them to be around for that long without adopting that and to still be alive, maybe there's something else, I don't know.
I mean, Complexity has a long esports legacy.
Absolutely.
That has some crazy history. Yeah. So, that alone, I think just having that lore, to use a Diablo 3 term that people are going to appreciate,
is a big deal.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, people could probably tell you, you know, who their managers are, who one of their managers are.
Jason Lake.
Yeah, exactly.
Bass,
you know?
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
And,
Scott,
like, the executive's
well.
Doing a great job. I know Soundblaster.
Right.
Good show. Soundblaster's right fucking in the middle. They always attribute Soundblaster. That's a good job. Where's the
all their video
the
content
Check 6?
Too?
Quantic. Do you guys know Quantic used to have a podcast?
No. I think I do remember that.
Yeah. They had a StarCraft 2 podcast.
Yeah. Yeah.
The more you know.
The more you know. Do-do-do-do-do. Let's talk about the recent changes. I wrote some notes here. Actually, I've got the patch notes. Wait, that's the wrong one. Oh, shit, man. I'm sorry. There we go. So only two things came out suddenly. Three things. I'm sorry. The observer build time decreased from 40 to 30 seconds.
Yep.
Let's talk about that one first.
The observer?
A lot of people immediately heard that, said that, saw that, played with that, and weren't big fans of it. But now that it's live, anyone have any?
PvZ doesn't make too big of a deal. PvT, it's kind of big because sometimes robo build time for Immortals and Colossus, particularly Colossus, is kind of at a premium, so you save those 10 seconds. Plus, you just get an observer out almost immediately if you chrono it. And faster scouting, faster reaction time.
I think it also reduces the effectiveness of quick cloaked banshee builds to an extent.
That's actually pretty
big. Like, a lot of times, you know, you'll have that, like, 10-second window where you can nab, you know, 4 or 5 probes, but the observer getting out a little bit earlier, I think, doesn't necessarily neutralize those, but certainly makes them less effective.
It takes 3 DTs to attack it instead of 2 now to kill the robo before the observer will get out. If you start building and chrono boost it right away. So there's that huge influx in DTs are being. I mean, the weird part for me is that this wasn't a necessary change at all. There's no Protoss complaining about the build time for observers, and it does help against fast cloak Banshee. It does help against those builds where, like, you build an observer, it goes across the map, then a Banshee shows up at your base, and now you have to wait until the next one comes out. But that's such a small, like, and that wasn't a, like, as far as I was concerned, that wasn't a balance issue, because there were ways to prepare for that. Like, you just start building the second observer after the first one, and having 2 observers out, while it does kind of suck, that 75 gas and build time doesn't make it impossible to hold off a 1-1 or something like that. So I look at this as, like, Protoss were having a slight challenge with a couple things, and for whatever reason, Blizzard targeted it as, like, major issues in made a gradual fix. Like Greg said, it doesn't affect PvZ, but it's a nice little boost to Protoss at a time where they didn't need it, especially in that area. So I don't understand it, to be honest.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. It seems very misplaced. Like, Protoss in general is doing well, but the problems that Protoss have specifically are, like, PvZ defending some of those big game timings, like the Roach, the 200-200 Roach all-in, or whatever. Or maybe late game against the super, super turtle Broodlord Infestor Spine, just really obnoxious playstyle. And Observer does absolutely nothing for that. It seems like a really random change.
Well, I mean, one thing I sort of like about it, and I think this can be said for all the changes as well, is that I like the fact that they're going small. with the changes.
You think 10 seconds is small? That's going to be one of my questions.
Well, I mean, on an OBS, it's not a combat unit. It's totally different, I think. But I like the fact that the changes aren't drastic. Some of them affect the game more than others, but I just like the fact that they're keeping it small and doing minor adjustments and then maybe seeing where it goes and then taking it from there, as opposed to like patching something and then later on being like, oh crap, maybe we overdid it on this one.
Yeah, minor changes are definitely a better idea. I wish they would be smarter about what they changed, but minor changes are definitely good because Blizzard pretty consistently has refused to revert a change they make. So if they go overboard, then they have to go and fuck something else up.
It's not even if, it's when. They've done major, like, I think we could still agree the Ghost one was over. I mean, we don't need to restart that conversation, but, like, their policy used to be what was described as, like, over-moderating so that they could then scale it back if they found it to be too severe. But I don't have that much trust in their balancing, so I don't like, you know, I don't like them leaving off or something that severe.
I don't recall them ever actually, like, scaling back a change. Usually that's they the end thing. Up going trying and fixing something else to make it look like they didn't fuck up before.
They would just say that they could do that, is, I guess, the argument that was coming out.
Right. Yeah.
It's better to come out with one patch that nerfs something or fixes it instead of, like, four patches in a row where they're gradually scaling it up. That was their argument. I don't necessarily agree with that. But in practice, what happened was, like, one giant nerf, and then later they approached something different.
So then let's talk about the other two. Overlord movement speed increased from some arbitrary number to another arbitrary number that's 25% faster, and Queen anti-ground weapon attack range increased from 3 to 5. And, you know, frankly, I'm really curious to hear what Idra has to say about this. I mean, I was pretty happy with these changes as a Zerg player.
The Overlord speed thing is a really good change. It is actually something I've been asking for like a year and a half. I just think scouting in general in the game needs to be better, and this definitely helps with it. There's some positional things, like on Antigua, if you find them first CVZ, you can see them in time. Like if you're going 15 hatch, but then you see a 10 pull, you can go ahead and put down pull first. Mm-hmm. So there's little specific things like that, but just in general, you get next to your opponent's base faster. It's better for two racks or scouting proxy pylons. Okay. If you have an Overlord cut out near an edge and a Marine finds it, it usually survives anyway. Plus, then when you sacrifice into bases, you see X amount.
Almost everything.
Their base, yeah. It's just a good thing in general. More scouting means less randomness, which is really good for the game.
I was going to ask. Well, go ahead, Pinyuza.
I think the last point that Idra mentioned is probably the one that stands out the most to me, at least as a Terran player. I've noticed that it's much more difficult to hide buildings or hide tech. And when they do the sacrificial scout, sometimes they don't even necessarily need to sack the Overlord. And almost always they have an opportunity to see what they need to see. They can get a pretty good scope of exactly what you're up to if they just sack one Overlord. And I think that's probably a good thing, because it's really kind of retarded sometimes how Zerg loses in situations where it's like they'll sack an Overlord, but it'll miss, like, you know, 4 or 5 inches of the base, and they'll miss, like, a starport with a tech lab or an additional 3 Raxes or something like that, and then get all in. So I think there's a lot less of that now as a result of the Overlord speed, which is pretty cool. Yeah.
Is anyone disagree with this change on the board here?
No, I think everybody agrees it's good. Like, sir, I'm not getting rehashed. It's a good change. It's great.
Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about the the Queen range too, because that is just another super welcome change as far as I'm concerned. I don't know if that's as necessarily widely accepted as, say, the Overlord speed change.
Well, the 50 mana thing that they were going to do to a Queen would just like broken CVT. So as nice as it would be to have that, and as much as the Zerg deserves a 60% win streak for a while, that change was kind of bad. And
yeah, I was 3 to 5.
Yeah. The 3 to 5 range thing, it actually hasn't helped as much for Hellions as I kind of expected. It's really, really good against any kind of Reaper or Bunker harass. Like, if you get Queens out, you destroy it. It's over.
Right, right.
And it helps a lot against stuff like Marauder Hellion all-ins, actually. It's quite effective against just any kind of early game defense. But actually pushing out the Hellions and getting your creep spread going, which is something that pretty much everyone was concerned about, it doesn't help nearly as much as you would expect. Generally, you can still run in and pick off the tumors and then run away anyway. So I think it's a pretty solid change, and it hasn't had a gigantic effect.
What about you guys? Same question. I mean, obviously, it does have an effect on like Reaper openings for Terran players. Have you had any issue with it, Jeff?
I'll let Pena just speak a little bit more too. I mean, I can talk about Terrans too. Like, they have been complaining a little bit. Obviously, there's the Avilas of the world saying that it's like unwinnable now, and really, you know, like Reaper goodbye. We're seeing those funny pictures of like Reaper rest in peace and stuff. Right. From a Protoss perspective, I like the change because it does a few things. Like, it does make warp prism defenses a little bit better, actually. So queens can actually hide amidst the minerals and start getting a few extra hits on them, things that are warped in, so they're just better at that job. And I think that's starting to approach things that were difficult for Zerg players, which is dealing with those warpers. But obviously it's not like the hard answer, and I don't think there necessarily should be one, but it is a move in the right direction to help them mitigate that to a certain extent. Also, early game Zealot harass, so like if two or three Zealots show up to a base and there's just a queen there, it used to be that the queen had to just run for its life, that's just all it could do. But now there's some more options again, so you can like box with drones a little bit more effectively, use lings a little bit more effectively, just because that queen's getting two or three extra hits, and then it's also staying out of harm's way a little bit longer, so there's a little bit of kiting going on there. Obviously, beyond that, it's not the biggest deal. You're not going to see the queen being added to anything outside of like Fitzy's here compositions, which is pretty cool stuff, but not enough to like change how we use queens entirely. So from a Protoss perspective, I think it's moving in the right direction. Zerg definitely needed a buff in that regard, and I think this is a pretty safe buff, I think.
Excellent. Payne User, do you want to comment at all about Reaper openings with the change? Or?
I mean, I think it's definitely easier for queens to pick off Reapers, for sure. It's easier for them to pick off the SCV building the bunker. But I think it's more influential with Hellions. They can do a lot more sustained DPS to Hellions inside the natural or inside the main while they're chasing on creep. And I think that's good, because the way it was before, I mean, Hellions can just kite queens all day, and off creep, it's kind of a joke. You can virtually take no damage from queens. So at least queens can put up a little bit of a fight now, I feel like, and do more sustained DPS.
If Hellions get into your base, queens are much better at shooting them down now. That's one thing where they're quite a bit more.
Yeah. Especially if you have like two or three of them and they're all just maximizing their range and chain DPSing, you can get rid of Hellions pretty quick.
Yeah. The one thing I find really strange, again, it just feels like a really mistargeted adjustment. Like Zerg was struggling. They decided we needed help. But then they do this, which helps quite a bit early game CVT, which wasn't really an area where Z was weak, and Z in general versus Terran, that was our easier matchup. But ZVP, been struggling with, and early game was where Zerg was good, and then late game, it gets kind of harder, especially mid-late game, where you're dealing with timing attacks before Broodlords, and then trying to deal with the Deathfall. And the Queen thing obviously does absolutely nothing to address that. So, again, it just feels like it's a decent change, but a really weird, unnecessary one.
Yeah, I don't know if we're ever going to get a solution to the Death Ball, really.
Well, they're taking out the Mothership, so then they have to give Protoss some other way to deal with Broodlords, and then maybe it'll be okay.
Every single game.
I think it's kind of interesting, though, like the fact that Zergs in the super late game and Terrans in the super late game both have to make, you know, pretty significant sacrifices in order to just compete with Protoss in the late game. Like, Zerg has to invest ridiculous amounts of drones into spine crawlers. And Terran has to cut a ton of SCVs, add orbitals in order to bolster their army supply Well, no, I mean, I'd like maybe to see some balance changes where the late game is a little bit, I don't want to say more even, but that Zerg and Terran don't have to make like strange sacrifices that I don't think really like.
I think CVP late game is, balance aside, it's just inarguably a terrible for gameplay. Like, either you sit on a spine crawler wall and slowly push that forward.
Yeah.
Or you go out and try to engage, and then it comes down to whether or not the vortex hits. Otherwise, you know, it's terrible for gameplay, terrible to watch, terrible to play.
I agree.
Balance completely aside.
You should never have a situation where something hinges on something like a vortex like that. It's just make or break right there.
Yeah. It gets a little bit more exciting, I think, when players start utilizing Warp Prism and then Zerg's responses to Warp Prisms, and then there's certain situations where, like, the the Brulords come out at 17 minutes and the Protoss doesn't have a mothership out yet, so they're actually playing to buy a lot of time, so there's a lot of harass techniques and like dodging the Zerg army that's kind of cool there, but I mostly agree with Greg. Like, for the most part, if you don't have a mothership, it's actually nearly impossible to fight the Zerg super army, so everything about the Protoss play is about either killing the Zerg before then or having the mothership, which then instantly kills the Zerg, so it's like very severe either way.
Well, the worst part of that is that the interesting things you were saying, those are what happen when people play suboptimally, when you like don't rush for the mothership, or when Zerg doesn't have enough spine crawlers to hold off Four Prism Harass on its own. So it's like, if everyone does what they really should do, it's just an awful fucking game.
Can we kind of take this actually to one of the other things? Recently, we were going to bring it up one of the previous weeks, and we ran out of time, where QXC... had written a blog, talked a little bit about the analysis of TVP, supporting the idea that the longer the game goes on, the longer it goes on, the more in favor it goes to the Protoss. And then recently, you sort of had a nice write-up in Control with the Muslim, kind of taking the concept even further. It's big on Reddit right now, getting a lot of comments on Team Liquid as well. And, I mean, obviously we're kind of moving away from the balance changes, but I really felt a lot of people were inquiring about this in emails and tweets, etc. So I don't know if you'd like to talk about it a little bit. I'm going to bring up the article. Of course, it's over on evilgeniuses.net. But it kind of just a nice transition out of what you were just talking about and sort of dealing with these types of things. I really felt like the article was good and left here words on it.
It's interesting. It's definitely something worth looking at because I think a lot of people have very much so looked at the late game of TVP in particular and kind of talked about how Protoss seems really, really favored there, and I wouldn't necessarily disagree. I guess the argument that would be had here, like my first one would be a temperament argument. I would say we've spent the majority, and by the majority I mean every single month except for this last one, where Terran's win rates have been higher than Protoss, and Zerg, actually. They've been the most winning race in all of StarCraft II the entire time. And what we found is that there'd be, like, the 1-1 would come out, and everybody would be like, myself included, I fell victim to, or I subjected myself to this lack of foresight, and I'd be like, it's imbalance, it's just, you can't beat it. Like, it breaks the game, it's just bad. But what we found out is a couple weeks later, a couple months later, yes, it's powerful. Nobody's ever going to say it's not. But what they found out is that there are ways to play around those strategies. There's maps that get changed. There's ways to, like, the metagame kind of evens out. And what I'm finding is that for the longest time, Protoss played very severe ways. Like, we didn't have really good role models in the Protoss race. So there was either, like, MC, who's very consistently been doing two-base timings and all-ins for the most of his gameplay. There's been other players who are very much so kind of cultivated their gameplay around that kind of stuff. And those have been our leaders. But then more recently, we've had players like a Squirtle and like some of these foreign Protosses that are starting to favor like the feinting of a timing, but while still macroing behind it, the composition between the Colossus and the Templar and kind of the harmony therein. Finding out that you don't want to go 5 Colossus, then switch to Templar. You actually want to go 3 Colossus, switch to Templar, that kind of stuff. And when to swing back into Colossus. So what we're finding out is that the Protoss have kind of leapfrogged Terrans in terms of the metagame and have figured out how to play their race in that matchup really powerfully well. And right now there's been a huge skyrocket in success. What I would always say is, as a temperament argument, like, let's give it more time. Let's figure out if Terrans can actually find the balance and swing it back before we start crying that the sky is falling. And that would be something that obviously people would be like, well, what about this argument you made in the past where you did the same thing? And I'd be the first to admit it. Yep, I've complained too about balance in the past, and I'll probably do it again in the future. And it's always a good lesson that we should remind ourselves that we're going to play this game no matter what, so rather than tell yourself that it's broken and you hate it and it's never going to be balanced ever again, it's probably a more productive thing to at least try to find the fun in it and give it some time to improve itself, as Brugor did over the years as well. So then I guess I spent a lot of time on that, so I'll just say this real quickly, but the argument that was being made throughout the article basically from my side was asymmetrical balance is kind of the direction you want, where a Terran or Zerg, but in this case Terran, is more favored in early and mid-game, and then later, if the Protoss can exist until that long, a lot of their big weapons start to work in a more fine harmony amongst or with each other, and they're rewarded for that. So that's kind of where we go.
Can you talk a little bit about one of the points that, you know, when you sort of read it out, you're like, oh, yeah, that's right, they do. Is that that late game Protoss army has a lot of splash damage.
Yeah.
Or, you know, AoE capabilities together.
One thing that I'd like to note is, like, when you, like, something like the 111, for example, it was kind of a phenomenon. It was a build order that had been practiced and developed and then kind of hit the scene and was sort of a flash in the pan type thing. I feel like the TVP late game situation has kind of been an overarching problem in the matchup for quite some time. And I think that Protoss are figuring out a lot of, like, I feel like the way it plays out, Terran has to do damage at certain points to try and compete, I guess, in the late game. And Protosses are getting very, very good about, you know, placing stalkers in their main at the right time of the game when drops are approaching, you know, putting up cannons in the proper places, things like that. They're not taking greedy thirds so much anymore. They're kind of, you know, getting their tech situated first, getting their upgrades going, playing a very passive style. And now that they've sort of figured that out, it makes it very difficult to inflict damage with drops. And once they get to that late game composition with the upgrades to boot, it's just like it becomes a mess, yeah. To be honest.
Generally speaking, it's easier to be the aggressor than the defender at first, because, like, what we saw all through, like Jeff said, something would happen and Terrence would bitch about it for a while, and then all of a sudden they shoot back up to 60% win rate because they just found a new timing. And every time, Protoss would have to adapt and figure out, okay, I need to have X force fields here, or I need to have my upgrade finished by this point, or I need to be ready for a drop by this point. And Protoss just kept learning and kept learning. And it seems we've gotten to a point where Protoss has pretty much figured out how to deal with any kind of pressure that Terran's going to throw at them on the whole. Obviously, sometimes it still works, but just by and large, Protoss are defending everything and getting to that late game situation more and more frequently. And I kind of agree with Taylor there. It's just 1-1-1 was more of a specific build order thing that got figured out. This feels like a more fundamental problem. It's just that Protoss army late game. The army itself is incredibly good. Archons plus Templars plus Colossus. And then you have the whole factor where you can warp in 20 charge slots before Terran has any chance to reinforce. It feels like a fundamental problem. It just feels like the Protoss army is too much better than the Terran army.
It's rough. And I feel like also, you know, Protosses are figuring out more and more timings, and their game is just getting tighter and tighter as it progresses. They're figuring out the drop timings, they're figuring out stim timings, things like that. And the tighter it gets, the easier it is for them to get to the late game unscathed. And once they get there, it's really tough to deal with. It's not unwinnable, though. I mean, you can certainly have a great battle and get really good Viking positioning and hit your EMPs and just have a tremendous victory. And I mean, it can swing both ways, but I feel like the onus is on the Terran a lot of times to hit those things properly, to have really good Viking position, try and pick off a few Colossus, and if those things go awry, it just snowballs out of control real fast.
Yep, and I would urge is that, like, people don't put their careers on the line right now with whining too much, because I do feel like it's actually going to swing back into a more even keel matchup. There were times where Protoss were winning literally 30-40% in matchups, and they were bitching to the heavens and just, you know, like, oh, we can't win. Imagine if they got major buffs at that time. Because now we're back into this situation where Protoss is on the upswing. If when they were bitching about how terrible Protoss was, if they got buffs, this upswing would have been like a fucking...
Well,
I'm standing
fair.
Over Greg in the morning and just like, you don't actually get out of bed.
Protoss got some pretty significant buffs, like the War Prism and the Immortal and... I think there was some other stuff.
Upgrade researches?
That's my point. Like, yeah. No one was asking for +1 range on the Immortal, which was nice. Everyone was complaining that the Warp Prism was absolutely fragile, and I think even you, in your Zerg vision, could see that the Warp Prism probably needed a little bit of a change. But outside of that, like...
It was pretty worthless.
If everyone got what they wanted, this game would actually be unplayable.
Yeah.
I
definitely agree. So many times now, Terran has been buffed pretty much, or has been nerfed pretty much every patch so far. And every time, Terran players are like, the sky is falling. And then they just, you know, this month, what, Thorzane won a tournament? There's some like four major tournament wins for Terran this month.
I think MVP's going to win this weekend. And I've got a joke lined up.
I really hope he does.
Say what it is.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say what it is.
Yeah, Terran's, despite all of the complaining and all of the nerfs, you know, you keep getting nerfed because you keep winning more than everyone else. So, until that stops happening, it's kind of hard to have much sympathy for them.
Avilo is my barometer for sanity in threads. Like, when Terrans are complaining, I look for the Avilo comment, and then when I see it, I then go, oh, okay, never mind, this is all fine. Like, as long as he still complains, then I know that the game's still heading in the right direction.
All right. Pain user, if you're still here, turn your cam back on.
They just took his computer. Like,
dude, people have been stealing his stuff all show.
Like, you know what could be the case, though? Maybe like, the complaints are right. Like, let's entertain this, too. Like, let's say Protoss did find a situation where
awesome. They're
finally playing the game the way Protoss was maybe intended to be, or maybe it's just the way it's end up happening, and maybe they do need a nerf. But what I absolutely will not tolerate is, like, half a month of Protoss success, and then people like, well, that's fucking it! That's fucking it! I'm switching to Protoss! And then they never do, because they know they're being irrational. But if we have the Terran dominance that Protoss had, I will be the first in line to say we need a fucking nerf. I don't want to see...
Yeah, if you win 60%
for GSLs in a row. Yeah, like 6 GSLs in a row where like 7 out of the 8 top 8 guys are Terran or some shit. Or Protoss, excuse me, in this situation. Yeah, let's fucking nerf those guys. That's unacceptable. But until then, man, give the metagame some time.
Well, I'll tell you what. I mean, obviously some great discussions going on as far as this is concerned. You can head over to Reddit on Team Liquid, over on the Evil Geniuses site. There's all sorts of good conversation going on about this. Why don't we go ahead and take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the upcoming events this week, and then we'll open up the phone lines, because that's always good times here.
I'm still hoping for my good troll. I want a good troll.
I don't know, man.
That just invites people to try it, and
I think it intimidates them. Last time we didn't have a single troll, because they knew.
Actually, you're right. You're right. We gong them now.
It is rather hit or miss, to be honest.
All right, well, we'll find out how hit or miss it is going to be, guys. We're going to take a quick break. We return Inside the Game, episode 42, continues here in a second hour on OneMoreGame.tv. Thanks for joining us. We'll be right back. Alright, guys, welcome back to the second hour of Inside the Game. This is episode 42. I'm joined by Check6 Pain User, EG Adra, and EG Inc. Control. And two big events going on this weekend. We've got, of course, the GSL Finals, which will potentially crown an old champion or a new champion. And then we've got MLG Arena. Let's talk a little bit about the GSL Finals. I've quite enjoyed GSL this season. I don't know how much you guys have actually... kept up with it throughout
just about all of it.
The season.
Most of it.
All of it.
Yeah. It's good on you guys.
I've watched all the Zerg games, so I haven't really watched anything.
Yeah, well, you know, that's still coming.
Check out Code A, man.
Wow.
Some wild stuff. I believe it's, is it Saturday night or is it Friday night?
The GSL final. Definitely finals. Get to that weird math where it's like Friday night, but then it goes to Sunday morning, Saturday morning and shit. Like, I can't even...
I have no idea.
This weekend.
Yeah.
So we'll watch it.
Saturday, so I think it's Friday night, late Friday into Saturday for us, yeah. Where LGIM MVP is going up against Startail Squirtle. You know, what do you guys think about an old champion or potentially a new champion here?
Oh, man. I think it's going to be an awesome series. I'm really excited to see it. I think Squirtle is going to put up a much better fight than Parting did. Just because I think Squirtle's execution and his micro, and in the early game, I think he'll be able to hold off a lot of those cheeses. But I don't know. We'll have to see. And, you know, MVP just showing time and time again that he's willing to cheese and all in at any point in a best of. And
that's
he can,
how Terran should be played.
I know, and he can execute it very well. And I think every Terran should take a page out of his book because he's really just screwing with people's minds. I mean, he's taking very early, you know, 1-2-0 leads over people, and it's just devastating to come back from that. I mean, if you saw his series with Parting was absolutely devastated after the second game and, you know, attempted to make a comeback. But, I mean, his body language, his head was sulking. I mean, it was just...
He got schooled, man. Like,
oh, absolutely.
Saying, oh, I got a Terran. Like, I eat Terrans for breakfast and lunch. Like, it's not even going to be a problem.
Yeah.
And then watch the series... not to put too much, like, I don't actually talk to Parting, so I'm obviously going off of speculation, but he went in with the very standard, one gate expand, one gate robo, two gas, three gate robo, and then, like, he did the one forge thing, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
And he did that, like, three or four times out of the four or five games, whatever it was. Can't remember. It was a 3-1 loss, right?
3-1, yeah.
And he actually got his face smashed. He just got completely smashed. So, like, going into it, he was super confident. He obviously had, like, one build that he was kind of using as a crutch, like, this is supposed to be working, and then he just got, like, he went 1-1 in the macro games, then he got outclassed in the
big
games
time.
Where MVP played sub, like, differently, offbeat, and I would be devastated if I was Squirtle going into that thinking, you know, I'm on a ride to destiny, because he's going to win a PvP, like, he beats, or not Squirtle, excuse me, Parting.
Yeah.
I know that Squirtle's been on the sickest heater ever, but I really think Parting would probably win that series, and, now he's facing, you know, third or fourth place.
Yeah, I'm very interested to see how Squirtle's style sort of matches up with MVP's, because Squirtle has a very unique style. I don't think he plays like Parting at all, and he will hit some very aggressive two-base all-ins with Mass, Blinkstalker, and Colossus, and it's very effective.
Sure.
He's knocked out, you know, MKP... And, I mean, he just has some very, very strong timing pushes. And I don't know whether MVP can hold them or not, because MVP was going for all-ins himself in a lot of in the series as well. He showed a few timings where he would pull, you know, half of his SCVs and hit a max 200 timing with Terran. And that's kind of similar to what Squirtle tends to do with Protoss against Terran. He loves to hit those two base all-ins. So it's kind of interesting to see, you know, how they're... How their two base all ins would match up against each other if they both went.
I have a feeling that MVP will be the aggressor actually in the series, like at least mentally.
Yeah.
And I know I'm off webcam. I have to clean my dog real quick, but I think MVP is going to be the guy who's going to open up like weird 2-3 rack shit and then fall back on a macro game and try to throw Squirtle off.
And I think he can. I think he's capable of doing just that too.
Yep. Yeah, MVP definitely knows how to win. I'm not sure if it's just frustration with TVP or the fact that he knew he was playing against two pretty greedy macro players in Nanuwa and Parting, or if it's just his wrist and he's actually not practicing like everyone says. But he has done what's necessary to win. He's just
absolutely
destroyed his opponents in terms of the mental game, like Taylor was saying. He just completely got inside Parting's head and mindfucked him. So, like,
straight up, that's what I was going to say, but I was just like, why not?
I mean, it's pretty much what it is.
I think if a Terran goes in and just one racks expands four or five games out of a best of 7 or 9 or whatever, I bet they lose 3 or 4 of those games.
Yeah,
I think if a Protoss knows that a macro game is coming and they can just like sit on two sentries and then three base, you know?
And I think it's kind of beautiful the way, you know, like in game one he'll open up and kind of feign like it's a macro game, and then he does that two base all in where he, you know, will pull a million SCVs, and then in game two he'll just straight up open up with the two racks and pull a ton of his SCVs and just take a super quick win. But then again, he's kind of played that hand, so you know,
Squirtle. There's so many different ways to show it. Like he's played is that he's capable of doing it. So Squirtle's going into this knowing that he could face a dumb build. Like, let's be honest. Three racks, that thing he did on Entombed Valley?
Yeah.
That's a dumb build. That's a dumb build. But you know what? If a Protoss in the back of their mind is like, this guy might just be coming with a shit ton of Marines and SCVs, they have
might
to play
just
differently.
Do anything. Yeah. Yeah. It's so scary to play against a player who you know is capable of that, particularly when it's one who can also do everything else. It's like trying to be ready for everything doesn't work. Like, if you happen to pick the right thing, then you can win. But if you try and compensate for everything, then everything will beat you because you do it half-assed the whole way.
That's why I like how he's playing, because he played the macro games, not even super greedy, but then he would play it super greedy. He'd do like three command center, two base, which is the greedier version of that, which is susceptible to a Squirtle timing in isolation. But then you'd also follow it up with a game where he's just doing standard two base, gets his medevacs out, can go ghost if you're on gateway units, and he plays it standard. And guess what? He's still fucking MVP with bad wrist or not.
Yeah.
He's one of the best Terran players on the planet.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's got like the triple threat, if you will. You know, he can come at you with any different look. And I totally agree with you, Jeff, in regards to the Squirtle's got to have all these things running in the back of his mind. He's got to be playing out all these different potential cheeses and whatnot. And it's got to alter his play style a little bit. You have to think he's going to play a little bit differently.
Well, one thing to keep in mind is it's Squirtle. Like, he might just say fuck it and go the two base Colossus all in every game regardless. And
it's so good.
Work. It's really, really good.
So powerful. It really is. It's so difficult to hold off that mass Blink Stalker three Colossus timing push. It's kind of ridiculous, especially with his micro, and like he has it down pat. I mean, he's knocked out
when
so
much. When you do it that much, you learn how to do it pretty well.
Yeah. And it's just such a strong timing as well. I mean, it's the Terran doesn't really have time to get everything in position, to get enough Vikings out, and it can just absolutely blast through bunkers or any kind of a fortified position you might have at your natural. And you just don't have enough units at that point, really, to deal with that two-base all-in. Is getting there, I think, is the question.
Let's talk a little bit about MLG Arena. Of course, everyone watched the GSL Finals, GOMTV.net. That'll be this weekend, and you'll probably watch MLG Arena and hop right to the GSL Finals. That's probably how it'll work with us in New York as well. We got a great roster this weekend. Of course, it's not an 8-player invite like the last one. This is the full 32 players and a really nice race distribution, as I believe it's like 11, 10, 11. Well, let me bring this up.
9 Terran.
11. Oh, well, I'm not sure if this has been updated with the changes, but it was 11 Protoss, 10 Terran, and 11 Zerg. But I don't know. I think that's still accurate based off of the changes.
I like that there's some interesting names in there as well. It'll mix things up a little bit.
You know, I hate to be a Debbie Downer. I don't hate to be a Debbie Downer. I like talking about this kind of stuff. I was sad about, like, one thing that needs to be addressed is there's 20 people in the Korean qualifier, which is an absolutely shitty showing. It's just shit, terrible shit.
I think there was even less in the European one, too.
What's that?
I think there was even less in the European one, too.
The European one was sub-20 or 20-ish, you know?
Wow.
The North American one had 63, 64 people, and half those were Korean. MLG needs to look at this and say the PPV model is working. That's what Sundance has come out and said, so we can count on that being a good thing. Their production, their performance, what they put on in New York is a fantastic tournament. A good cash prize, good things are at stake. They do a good job. They treat the players well. It's really nice. I think we can all agree on those things. But the part that's absolutely terrible is their outreach. Like this, or something. Something is falling short here, because that the qualification for this could actually be the cancerous tumor that unwinds it eventually. Like, if they get if Europeans don't really care, if Koreans don't hear about it, and if North Americans are getting squelched by the Koreans that come over here for a free ticket, you're going to have a very underwhelming tournament that's eventually going to start to kind of fade away. And I think that would be a serious mistake. So I'm surprised we're not hearing more MLG statements saying, our guy who's supposed to talk to Koreans did a shitty job, or...
I mean, we
need to make it more exciting for Europe.
The really crazy thing about it is that with the 25 players that are there, it's like 25 really goddamn good players. You
oh,
know?
Absolutely.
But you're right. I mean, you are right. You know, how many guys are showing up to the Code A or Code B tournaments?
Hundreds.
Yeah.
I think that like one would be.
Yeah, actually, because I was just thinking about the pros, but you actually, if you live in Korea and you play the Korean qualifier and you qualify, you get full expenses paid. You get flight and hotel and everything. So some of those teamless people or the lower tier ones on the team post on a community site. I can't imagine them not signing up. This is like a gigantic opportunity for them.
And the thing is, these qualifiers are filled with top tier players, like the stream chat right now. They're all going on, like all the top people played. You're right. But if there was more exposure, if this was a bigger deal, or if there's more draw, we'd have little storylines like, did you hear about that unknown Korean that beat Oz and then he beat fucking Alive?
And those are the best.
Well, even
he didn't qualify, but he made this amazing run or something, you know?
Well, and those are the best kind of stories, I think.
Even amongst the people who did play, I am Dream TT, who's like not a famous player at all. I'm not even sure if he's Code A. He made it through, even amongst those 20 like really, really good players. He beat out Puma and JYP and whoever else tried to qualify and didn't of famous pro gamers. So even amongst just those 20, the one random guy who signed up, he actually got through. So like, there's certainly potential for pretty much any Korean pro gamer to make it through on a good day.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the event itself. So we saw the competitors list. We've got, well, I mean, it, no, it was
that's a JP transition if I ever heard
of it. Was. I don't know what else you want me to say, Jeff. I think you're right, man. I don't have anything to add.
I'm just teasing, man.
Gotta wait for the event to unfold, but...
Man, forget about this, man! All right. Let's hope next time. They still managed to get 32 players, though, even though we've had several dropouts. MC Hart, DRG, Gonzi, they, of course, come from the last Spring Arena. And then the... 10 people that made it out of the 25, which is a pretty good field. Alicia, Azanori, MMA, Polt, Ryong, Dream, Symbol, Lasira, and Leenok. North America qualifier, Mook, Killer, Huck, Select, Rain, Violet, Idris, Sleep. Huck was replacing Artist, or is replacing Artist. And
it stands worth mentioning, by the way, because there's so many people that fucking were complaining about that. They didn't draw a name out of a hat or be like, wow, Huck would draw a lot of attention. He actually... 1-2-0 in his consolation matches to put him in ninth place, which is the first person offered that eighth spot if someone drops out. So Huck absolutely earned to be the first replacement. So
yeah,
if there's anybody out there that thought that this was some kind of weird behind closed doors thing, please
definitely
know
not.
He actually took the consolation matches very serious. We were all here in between every game that Huck played when he like lost or even won. He got up and walked around because he wanted it so bad. He had to calm himself down.
That's awesome.
And then he lost his sleep, which every Protoss loses to sleep.
It's very, very true.
Except someone.
So, just saying.
Well,
everybody wants us to touch on Flash a little bit.
I think we will. We will. Let's actually just bring out probably one of the most tickling points of the MLG Spring Arena, because... In Control, it was only gone for a single event, but Extended Series is back. So this is going to be just like the last MLG Winter Arena that had 32 players. I'm really excited for this one. You know, I think now that a lot of these players that have been to the arena at least know what to expect, it's definitely a little bit more closed environment. And, you know, for that reason, might actually be a little bit better for the players, but certainly going to be a crazy, crazy fight for the top. But we didn't even get through all the European qualifiers as well. Zake, Bling, Seplo, Grubby, Goody, Stefano, Bly, Teffel, and Rhett. And then, of course,
I like
Gorzin.
Those names.
Yeah, I like the European representation.
Teffel is fucking good.
Yeah.
That guy is on the rise. He's from Team Blast. He is a really good Zerg, and he plays a different style. He does a Hydra Ling Corruptor style in ZVP, but
what?
He has extremely good macro. He hits like a 16 Broodlord army at like minute 18 off of that while applying pressure. It's actually disgustingly strong. A couple other names. Who are the other guys that qualified? It was Cyplo. It's really cool seeing him in there. He's another kind of up and comer.
Bly is a relatively new name to this kind of thing.
Bly,
too.
Yeah, Bly is as well.
Zerg, crazy good player. Grubby making a return, I think. After beating, wasn't it? Did he beat Rhett in that qualifier? Or was that?
Yes,
in the,
that's
yeah, he did. He much took Rhett out.
So, no, Rhett qualified too.
Maybe yeah, he qualified. Yeah, when he
beat him. So maybe it's just actually for like seeding or something, and nobody really cares about that. But Teffel is from the European scene, one of the guys that I would tell everyone to check out because not only is he a good player, but he plays a really exciting brand. Also, I'm really excited to see Stefano there. Obviously, he actually won that qualifier.
Yep.
Is this Stefano, some random seed, by the way? Like, how does this...
No, there was seeding for, like, number one, I think.
Oh.
He won.
So
and then Thorzing.
Seeding is really important going into the main thing. Like, the top 16 actually get to choose their first round opponents of the bottom 16.
Yeah, yeah. That's it.
Okay.
Thorzane's going to be crazy good. So,
so wait, they're
just...
But they're putting all 32 players into a bracket, right?
Yeah.
And how
wait,
are they put...
Wait, are they? I guess so. I don't actually know.
I don't see anything about group play.
I guess it's just a bracket. I just know that the top 16 get to pick their first round opponent in order from first through 16. Did Bishu make it through Europe?
I don't see him on this list.
No.
I was talking to Moro at the NASL event. He said Bishu is actually like sickeningly good in the first like 10-15 minutes of the game just because Moro's told him everything to do. So I was kind of curious to see him play.
He is not going to be there, Greg. I'm sorry to disappoint. That'll be this weekend. We're going to talk more about that tomorrow on Live on 3. And, of course, predictions as well. That'll be fun. You guys want to give some predictions? Idra, you're going to win it, of course, right?
Obviously. Me versus Huck in the finals, and I'll win.
What about the
Okay. Well, no, Huck's been on each for longer. Yeah. More.
Oh, it's gonna be good nonetheless.
Yeah.
So,
I'm pulling for Rhett, Select, and Idra and Pult.
It's a nice fair lay of the land, Pain User. You're not gonna piss anyone off with those picks. I don't.
No, I mean those are my go-tos out of the pool.
Jeff.
Team bias aside, like I said, I think Teffel could make a big splash. This will be one of his first major StarCraft II offline events, and obviously that could have a big impact on him. But I actually like the Symbol's been playing a pretty amazing Zerg right now. Spoiler, going to talk about
Symbol is really fucking
spoiler.
Good.
Okay.
Spoiler.
He won last night in convincing fashion.
He destroyed Jakchi like
destroyed
bad.
Jakchi. And Jakchi actually, by the way, in my opinion. When he beat, I think it was Leenok to win his GSL, I thought he played close to the most perfect TVZ I've ever seen. And that's not to say that he's, like, maintained that level, but he's actually fucking legit. And Symbol destroyed him.
Good on him.
Look for Symbol.
All right.
Now, Symbol and Seal are the two Zergs to watch out for. They're both really, really, really talented.
Well, I like the racial distribution of this competition. I think it's definitely going to be good times all around. So I'm excited, and good luck this weekend, Greg, for sure.
Thank you.
Yeah, good luck, man.
The other big thing people want us to talk about before we go ahead and open up the phone lines is, of course, the StarCraft Pro League that's coming out, the SK Planet Pro League Season 2, which is going to be a hybrid tournament requiring the players to compete in both Brood War and StarCraft 2, and they will have to alternate according to the rule set.
Is it just me, or does that strike anyone else as a really, really
stupid
proposition?
Thing to happen
it's,
in 2012.
It's terrible.
Absolutely
yeah.
retarded.
Stupidest thing to happen in 2012.
It just doesn't make any sense. It's
I think they just realized that they have to switch to StarCraft 2. That's where the future is, but they still want to pay homage to Brood War and like not piss off the fans and try and get them to come over. But
yeah.
So bad.
It's so unfair to the players,
yeah.
I feel. I mean, it really is. And Flash was
through the mud. It's gonna. Everyone's gonna like the Brood War players are gonna switch to full time practice of StarCraft 2 because they're gonna consider themselves good enough in Brood War that can just carry. So the level of Brood War play we're gonna see is gonna continuously drop down, and there's even a chance the level of StarCraft 2 play will also drop down in this league specifically because people are gonna diversify their time training, or they're gonna very specifically be like, you're training pure Brood War, or you're training pure StarCraft 2. I don't know how it's gonna work that way, but the bottom
Flash?
Line is, they're also going to put Brood War next to StarCraft 2 on screen time, Mm-hmm. And if you guys, like, everyone likes to watch, I mean, a lot of people like to claim that they love Brood War, and they're, like, new StarCraft II fans, or even StarCraft II fans now, they'll go back and watch Brood War. It's great. It's great. The level play is fun and stuff, but it's not for everyone. It's definitely not for people that didn't play it. And when you see
Absolutely.
How ugly Brood War is compared to StarCraft II,
oh, God.
It's
going
to bring both the aesthetics down. Like,
what about the thought of sacrificing the spirit of competition, which is something that StarCraft has been built on by, you know, I mean, as much as I'm looking forward to it, force-feeding this game to some of these guys. I mean, like, maybe some of them are not going to be able to make a leap to StarCraft II, or just frankly will not be that good.
Well,
like, isn't that going to...
I think... That's going to be a very rare instance.
You really think so?
I don't know. Top tier
for as situational as the game
over.
Is going to be?
I don't know, man.
Skill set is pretty different. I wouldn't be surprised if there were some reasonably high pros who just kind of crash and burn, or at least are nothing special at all.
I mean, yeah, I think it'll happen. I think a majority of them are definitely going to be top StarCraft II players after a six-month adjusting period, for sure. Yeah. But, like,
Another thing I wonder is how long they've actually been practicing seriously. Because, I mean, I know people talk about it in public. We've only played X months, X days, whatever. But, you know, everyone's lying because they want to look better.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
If they just switch over really recently, those games could actually be pretty terrible. And if you're trying to then shoehorn the Korean Brood War crowd into StarCraft 2 with this mixed format, and they see these awful games of StarCraft 2 from people who don't know what they're doing, that could also be kind of counterproductive to the whole thing as well.
Flash came out in an interview recently and said that he thought the hardest part was just going to be switching back and forth between the games.
Yeah. And he mentioned as well, he said that he was splitting his practice time, and he said he wanted to primarily focus on StarCraft II, but, you know, he had to still play Brood War because he didn't want to let down his fans and he didn't want to show poor results. And he kind of commented on some of his frustration with it. And... I mean, it just sucks for someone like Flash, who seems to be committed to StarCraft 2 and really wants to practice and start getting good. And then, you know, every time the Brood War tournament rolls around, he has to practice. And then he's also got such a legacy and a reputation in Brood War. It sucks to think that, you know, he might have to besmirch his legacy and put poor performances
what,
on.
Jeff, what,
Brood War. It's just so frustrating because, like, Brood War was this amazing, absolutely amazing... an anomaly. Like,
it was the best.
If you read the Prima Guide for what Blizzard thought Brood War should have been, it's like the dumbest, most short-sighted thing you've ever read in your life. And where it went, just naturally, and even accidentally with, like, meta stacking,
yeah, absolutely,
that came out of that. Like, it's just, it's such a, it should be honored and cherished, and it should have been, like, even Michael Jordan took four retirements, and that was sad, you know? It should have just kind of gradually, like, been, this is our final season. And everyone should have fucking cried. And everyone should have watched it. It should have had 10 million people on the stream.
Yeah.
There should be people who are like, that was my childhood. That's the best time I've ever had in my life. And now it's done. And instead, what's happening is it's like, you know, Brood War's
chopping
coming
away.
Back. It's going to be here. And it's instead of actually just playing Brood War, they're going to be playing it in a room filled with tigers. And there's fucking, like... steak sauce covered the player. There's a whole new element of, like, real danger. It's like, no! Put it down. Put it away. And you
Let
should have
die.
Done it homage Peace. And paid it respectfully. You know? Like, this is shit. This is really bad.
Yeah.
It's absolute shit. And the people that are kidding themselves on the forums and are like, oh, finally we get them both together and I can be happy and at one. You don't even know what you're asking for, man.
And we kind of touched on this in a previous episode, but... I think I had asked Wax Angel when he was on Live on 3, I said, you know, would you have preferred it if they would have just had a final Brood War Pro League and then called it good? And he basically said, absolutely. Are you guys in the same boat then?
Absolutely. 100%. Yeah. 100%.
They need to let, like everyone, like Jeff said, people are going to focus on StarCraft 2. The players are smart. They know that's where the future is.
Not only are people going to focus on it, Blizzard is pushing it hard.
Brood War is going to die sooner or later. They should have just done it with respect.
I totally agree. And, like, I think Brood War holds a special place in all our hearts, so it just sucks. Sucks to see that
It's actually
happen.
Hard to watch this. Like, it actually makes me upset.
Do you guys are, I mean, this is, like, Mayan calendar ending type shit. It sounds like you're. I mean, Jeff, you're actually.
It's just it's desperate. It's sad, and it's not doing.
It's not doing the competitors and the competition justice. The history of Brood War has yielded some of the best matchups, some of the best matches in the history of competitive gaming. And it's because it had a lot of integrity and they were focused on Brood War at the time. And now to have the players be split in this kind of pseudo tournament thing, I mean,
You know what it feels like?
I don't want to get too into it.
Their draft at like the Playboy Mansion. And spend $10 million, and it doesn't end up paying off. And then they're like all like mystified about how that didn't actually end up being a good decision. But everyone in the competitive gaming around it had to watch them do this and be like, "No, spend your money more wisely." That's what this is like. It's like this is a big fuck up, and it's going to hurt the entire scene somehow. And the powers to be thought in some weird way that this would be a great idea, and they're done.
And it starts in 5 days, guys. So, I mean, this is, like, right around the corner. That's the
I didn't realize it was that soon.
Oh, yeah. Let me double-check to confirm.
May 20th actually sounds familiar now.
Yeah, this may be the last. Okay, starting May 20th, we'll get to see the best of the best compete in both games, guys.
What they should have done is, like, if they really, really want to mix it and try and bring in the Brood War audience, is just have, like, a season or two. Because I think it's three iterations within the season. And just have one be Brood War and then switch over to StarCraft 2 after that or something.
Yeah.
Trying to mix it in like this is so bad.
Trying to like hybridize the two games in a single competition is not wise.
Can you imagine if like when the XFL was like on its last legs, they were like, okay, well for the next season of NFL, we're actually going to do the XFL coin flip with XFL players, but then have an NFL game afterwards. And then at the end, we'll have the XFL players kick field goals to determine a tiebreak or something like that. Like, it sounds like the stupidest thing in the world because it is a terrible fucking idea. Like, this is not... It's like, and now, let's bring out the Brood War players. Now, this map has been played on for 17 years, and these two players have known each other for 10 of them. Cool. Can you explain to me why the Hydralisk is being used here?
Awesome.
Can someone tell me that? Why is the Hydralisk still being used? And they'll be like, their mirrorless seem to be doing more damage. Can you tell me exactly how this is happening right now? Why is it that the Space Marines are dying? I don't understand.
All right. Are we ready to...
bring it.
Yeah?
Yep. Let's do it.
We are? Okay. We're ready to open the phone lines then. So, let's see. You can give us a call. Skype DJ Wheat or telephone 909-581-8519.
I gotta bring open the stream so I can watch Wheat reach for the ban button.
You'd have to what?
It's my favorite thing in the world. I always open the stream during the call so I can watch you hover your arm over the disconnect button. It's great. It's like that.
I want to like be able to interface with my GG button so I can just like pound that shit.
Can dude. I mean, get the gun run over there, and he'll figure it out.
He'll figure something out. All right. We're going to take our first call of the evening. Hello, we've got Ryan on the line. Ryan, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Not much. I don't really have much to say for questions. I just want to tell you guys that I really enjoy what you do, and you do a lot of good stuff for the community.
Thanks, man.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
Good day.
I love EG a lot. It's my favorite North American team, I have to say. And it's really nice to talk to you guys.
Thanks very much, Ryan.
All right. Yeah, I just want to start it out.
Way to start things off.
Yes, thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Coming in with some class, even though I thought for sure
positivity.
He was about to drop. I thought for certain, man, maybe my spider sense, it's like I haven't slept
five,
in 40 hours,
like,
you know?
It can't be.
I've drank like 30 monsters over the last at least 10 hours, and just everything.
You feel good then.
I'm like, amazing. I do.
When are you not on tons of monsters, man? If I had an unlimited supply of monster, I'd probably drink them all the time, too.
Oh, my God.
Oh.
The two good studios fighting one of the bosses in Diablo, and it looks like a giant waving amoeba. It's like...
Don't tell me. Spoilers and stuff.
Jeff's interest is peaking.
Yeah.
We might have to get you a digital copy.
What?
Oh, I have it.
Yeah.
Well, uh oh.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. We should play.
Let's take this next. We got Eric on the line. Hello, Eric. Welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Oh, hello. I'm on.
Fire.
I'm a big fan of. Sorry, I've got one sec. Let me.
You're intimidating him, Jeff.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm
a big fan of the show. I'm a big fan of you, DJ Weave. I think you're the best StarCraft 2 show host by far.
I'm glad you said show host there.
Thank you. Well, everything.
No, I'm you're fucking really so serious you don't even realize
it. Threw him off, Weed. Son of a bitch.
Sorry. What's up, man? What's your
question? My question is for... First, I'm going to tell In Control. I'm a big fan of you, big fan of your stream.
Did you have a question, Eric?
Yeah, I have a question. I just want to say to In Control, I watch your stream a lot, and I'm in Diamond League, top 8 Diamond, rank 2 to be specific. And when I watch your stream, I realize, holy shit, I'm actually about as good as you. And yet there you're, like, a sponsored player and stuff. Like,
dude, it took you so long to get to that punchline. Are you serious?
Get him, Jeff. Get him.
How do I get
I asked for a good troll, and what I get is a stammering piece of shit that's like, I'm Diamond and I'm as good as you are. No, you're not half as fucking good as I am. You're half as fucking terrible as I am. Do you understand that? You're trash, and you're even bad at calling in on shows. Get good at something before you do
shit. I don't cheese and stuff. I don't cheese stuff. He doesn't cheese, though. I'm about to get promoted.
All right, hold on. Shh. He's going to start talking for like the next 20 minutes. He doesn't know that he's not on anymore.
Yeah, you cut him off mid-rant there.
My instincts are sick, by the way. I told you to fire him 7 seconds.
Oh, that was guaranteed.
I knew.
Past like the 15-second mark, there was some serious troll brewing.
I don't know. I always worry about calling it just because they're stammery and awkward, because we get quite a few like that.
That's true.
That's the nervousness, which is weird, because he knows.
It's like fucking trollception and shit.
You just threw the webcam and like start grabbing him.
That's when you need
internet.
People use ladders as a way to like I'd understand if you just called me terrible. You can just do that. But when you actually go to like finite proof and I'm like, I'm Diamond and I'm as good as you, and it's like, no. By all like scales of measurement in terms of ladder, you're actually not as good as me, which is
weird. Actually an objective thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Why would you go there?
It's just a not truth.
It's just not truth.
Relative about it. Be open so you don't like get yourself in a problem. It's like, wait, I noticed that you're like older than me, but then I kind of considered my own age and I was like, damn, I'm as old as Weed is. And it's like, no.
We've got our next caller, guys. We've got Michael on the line. Hello, Michael. Welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hey, DG. How's it going?
It's going good.
Pretty good. Big fan of you. I had to ask EG a question.
Like, EG, do you want... Is this, like, addressing the whole house, then?
I meant In Control.
Oh, okay. Okay.
All right, EG, I seen you participated in the alt show match. How did that... I didn't know.
You all right, dude?
No,
yeah,
he's
I'm just
idiot.
Trying to think this through.
Is this, like, when Troll fails, or, like, are you actually...
Yes, it is.
This is at least getting more entertaining, though.
He doesn't realize that the Overlord speed increased and wonders why it's not working anymore.
He called you DG, then he said EG.
You know what? Sometimes you got to get him in the benefit of the doubt. Like, I mean, Michael, like, I mean, you somehow learned and figured out how to install Skype, so I feel like I've got to give you at least a few points right there, right, Michael? I mean, that's fair, right?
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, and you're what? You're 17 years old.
16.
16, okay.
We stand corrected,
Michael,
on that note.
I'm gonna give you some advice for next time.
All right.
Grab a piece of paper.
Write it out beforehand,
And, you know, maybe even in front of the mirror, like, grab an old an old, like, phone. You can even, like, hold it up and, like, pretend like that's what you're using. Go through it a few times. Maybe ask your mom to come in and just say, Mom, I'm going to read this to you. I'd love to, like, can you act like DJ Leader in control and maybe, you know, give back to me what I might get so I can be fully prepared for this.
All right.
Thanks, Michael. That guy.
Dude, he was rolling with it there. He was, like, absorbing the troll coaching. He's really trying to figure it out.
I don't know that he was if he was trying to troll, then I hope he takes Wheat's coaching very well, because he cited a show match that I won convincingly, so it's like...
Really?
There's actually a multitude of show matches I did not do very well
that's
in.
What, that's what he was trying to figure it all out in his head there in control.
I was unaware he cited anything.
Oh, yeah. Jesus.
I played a little $100 show match against a guy who needed more exposure, and I won very well.
Right
and,
now, in his house, he's like, Mom, can you watch me read this, like, on a fake telephone, maybe? Okay.
All right, guys, let's get some good questions. I know there's a few. Actually care
oh, go,
about
let's
StarCraft.
Just call it. All right, guys, we've got Alex on the line. Alex, hello, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
I'm actually kind of worried now since everyone's, like, so nice, so you might think I'm trolling if I say something nice to you.
I already feel like we've established trust already. So.
Yep.
All right. Well,
we're good.
Yeah. I'm a huge fan of all of you, and I hope you're doing really well.
Uh-oh. Red light's going off. No, I'm just kidding, Alex. Go ahead.
My question is primarily for a pain user and in control, but I'd love Idris' input, too. I'm a fairly shitty Platinum Protoss, and I'm just trying to figure out how it's best to play a PBT, because... At the moment, I've just been squirtling my opponents, my practice partners, and my opponents on ladder.
Is that what people say? Squirtling their
it
opponents?
Should be. It should
yeah,
be.
Yeah,
like
that's just like what me and my friends call
like
it.
It's now a verb, guys.
I've been war-twirtling my opponents. That's like the next phase.
That sounds like
but I prefer
like
to play a macro game.
That's not like we're
really
not allowed to talk about it on here. You didn't say the word squirtle on here.
To answer your question, I'll just... Like, what I would suggest is just one gate expanding every game, and then from there, there's different variations. There's the one gate robo, there's the one gate into 3K, and then, like...
Oh, no, I do. I go one gate expanded to two gate into robo and get... Like, I know, like, standard builds and whatnot. I'm just worried about taking the third base, because I tend to die to, like,
everybody's worried about taking the third base, man. So, good scouting. Grab the towers, get two observers, watch the ramp, watch for dropships, leave your stalkers in the back of your base... Zealot Sentry at the front. Once you get Colossus out, you now have map control, so grab a third, or wait for Templar to get a third and feint the two-base timing. Popular streams for that kind of gameplay is, like, Feast is a good job of that, Grubby. Do not watch White Raw for that kind of a thing. He'll make 17 Colossus and just kind of...
Yeah, for sure.
Just work with him in his defense. But yeah, just good scouting then is the answer you're looking for. If the guy's on two bases, no third command center... And all he's doing is making Marine Marauder and Medivac and Viking. You'd be pretty silly to take a third in that situation. So you just need to check the Templar. But if he's taking a third, it's okay for you to take it slightly later. You just need to watch for those dropships and tech the Templar off the three Colossus.
So just where did you... Like, try and give you like the Terran perspective of it, I guess. Where did you say you were going awry in the matchup? Like, what's like the problematic part?
I kind of feel pressured to take a quick third base in case the Terran does, so I don't want to get, like, overwhelmed, even though my macro is fairly decent. So I kind of lose to Stim Medivac pushes at, like, the 10-minute mark, you know, the standard kind of push. So I feel really vulnerable taking the third base, but it seems to be just the key is establishing some kind of splash damage first.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think one thing that you should be willing to concede... as a Protoss, is like a little bit of an economic lead in order to cross all your T's and dot your I's. Get your Colossus going, you know, make sure that you have sentries near the ramp, and just take your time. Don't take the third too quickly, and make sure you know exactly what he's up to. If you keep losing to those Medivac Stim pushes, then just wait until you have, like, you know, one to two Colossus out and a pretty good-sized gateway ball to tank for the Colossus, and then you should feel really comfortable taking your third. And if the Terran takes a third before you in that situation, a lot of times that's actually okay. You can totally recover from that. I don't think you should, like, freak out if the Terran's, like, plus one base on you or something like that, or if you send an observer in and you see an extra command center in his main or something like that. Don't don't let the Terran taking aggressive expansions dictate when you take yours. Just make sure you take it when you're safe.
All right, so just keep calm and make Colossus.
Just be really patient with Toss. I think that's like Toss against Terran should just...
Oh, fair enough. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, we lost.
Be really patient and...
All right, thank you, man.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Pain User's going to now answer for the next... Thank you, Alex. I appreciate it. Take care. Oh, Pain User, you like cut off a little bit there, but...
Oh, sorry.
You were in the middle of explaining everything I said, but in much more basic terms.
I can't tell if he got it or not.
I don't know. He's just kind of sitting there.
I think he froze.
I think he's having some internet issues, that's why.
Someone stole his internet. Yep. They're taking everything out of that.
Bleep, bleep, bleep. Someone kicked out. He's apparently got a Cat 5 cable. It's got... It's broken. It's a broken Cat 5 cable. Sorry. Okay. I gotta take the next one here. Let's take... I don't even know how to say that name. Nicholas. Hello, Nicholas. Welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
How can Nicholas be difficult?
No, it wasn't Nicholas. What? I'm going to try that one next. So, hello, Nicholas.
I guess I got to start with Big Fan because everyone else is doing it.
Oh. But,
not required.
Okay. You brought this up on the episode where you guys were playing games, but I was wondering how you feel. I'm from the Counter-Strike community, like a while back, and mm-hmm. how you felt about an amateur league such as Cal, if done correctly, and how it could benefit the community as a whole, because I know for me personally that brought me that amateur competition.
Yeah,
Counter-Strike.
Yeah, I've spoken about this before because I was a big, big fan of how the Cyber Athlete Professional League ran the Cyber Athlete Amateur League, which is basically a tiered system, right? So imagine that Grandmasters was invite and Masters was main. And or Cal invite
intermediate
Cal P.
open
open the whole concept was that you had something to work towards, right? You were in open, you wanted to move forward, you wanted to eventually get up to invite, and I feel like the latter already sort of establishes at least something like this. But the problem is that we haven't necessarily seen it go beyond that. Right,
like team leagues, it would be excellent. I think like a community based like team
league.
I don't know.
Thing like that would be awesome.
Lower mid level teams, the teams that actually couldn't get into the compositions that already exist.
No, they would be. Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
They seem so like fragile and undedicated. It's like you can already get into the qualifiers for existing team leagues, you know, without being that high tier.
No,
without
but
big sponsor.
Not if you can't compete with. You know,
but Idra, it goes down.
Grandmasters level.
But we're talking about like this goes down to the levels like you know my five buddies, you know, who we all live around.
Yeah.
We just want to have a StarCraft II team. You know, like that's how we're going to get better in sort of the spirit of competition. So is that accurate, Nicholas? Like you're not necessarily talking about even the highest level,
no,
but more like
I remember. Do you remember a Counter-Strike mod day defeat?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Like,
one of the
I remember
better
I joined Cal,
mods.
I was IM, and then worked my way up to Invite, and like over a couple years. And like that's how I enjoyed the game.
Amateur leagues are definitely a good thing. Like the ladder's nice, but it doesn't give you that competition. And also, I don't know, like what level, like how big are these leagues? Is there money involved? Is there support? Is it people who are attempting
to become professional? They were definitely community. They were definitely all community.
Yeah.
Like Invite had money. Right, so it would be like I mean, you'd never have this, right? You never have the GSTL, and then you have the GSTL A, B, C, D, E, F, all the way down to G, you know. And G is just
there's a chance the new UI, like with clan support, there might be a little bit more of this with the infrastructure being taken up. But I think this suffers from a couple things. Like first and foremost, if it's just purely like you want to be friendly and get better with your friends and stuff like that, then I think that's the clan support issue. If you're actually like, looking for like I'm more interested in watching average Joes play. Well, we have CSL, we have the high school league, we have the after hours gaming league, and all of those get like okay numbers. CSL being pretty well off in that regard, but like those are all the niche markets of like these are sub absolute top tier players, but they have a reason to play and there's something to get behind it. So that's kind of exciting. But if you're hoping to like run a league where it's like just purely these are a bunch of terrible players who are trying to get better. You're not going to get any eyes, you know?
Well, that's the thing, is that, like, Cal, even back in the day, it wasn't necessarily about, I mean, people only broadcasted and watched. So that's not totally true. I mean, most people broadcast and watch Invite, which would be the highest level.
Yeah.
That'd be what you guys, right? But that's what everyone was working towards. It's like, for a lot of guys, it didn't matter that they were in the open division, which is three divisions, you know, lower, and they were getting covered. They more cared about the fact where it's like, I have something to play for. You know, like, it's giving me a reason to get involved, to try to have a little team together. And we are so, you know, back in the Quake 3 days, be the old man referencing this, even the Quake days, you had your 519s, your Clan Capitals, your Nightbreeds. You had these top-tier teams. But then you had your Jobber Patrol, who was just like an aspiring team that wanted to, you know, that wanted to work their way up the ranks. And you know, we had a million of these smaller clans around, and they knew they weren't going to make money. Didn't necessarily have superstars on their squad, but they played, and that, like, that's what built the community. I'm all for it. I just don't know what infrastructure you need. I'm with In Control. I think that you have to have in-game support for it to really be effective in any way, shape, or form.
Absolutely. I like, and a lot of, like, the Cal system as well kind of functioned off of the whole, like, IRC system. I think it would be awesome if Blizzard could, like, try and find a way to implement, like, a crude form of IRC as their, you know, chat client. Because, like, all the different leagues in Cal, it was all community owned and community grown. Like, it would be community elected admins, like the people who would go for the positions for Cal admin and whatnot. Oftentimes they were community members, and all the different games had their own little satellite communities on Cal. It was actually really cool. I participated in a lot of different Cal leagues in various games, like CS, Natural Selection.
It just gave you reason to compete. Obviously, you absolutely, guys
and it was tiered as well. It was tiered, which was the cool thing. So, like, everyone was kind of aspiring to be Invite in a way, and I think it was a much cooler, much better system than the ladder system, where you have, like, Masters, Grandmasters, and there's no real, there's not that much hype around it, you know? It's like, alright, you've got your Grandmasters guys, you've got your Masters guys, but it's not like people are following the progress of players through Masters trying to make it into Grandmasters or anything
unless
like that. Like, there's no
some sort of an established player. So
we've got to
move on. Our time is running short. So Nicholas, thank you for the call. Actually, good point, and thanks.
Yeah,
for
good question.
Thanks for taking it.
Yeah, bye bye.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Let's go ahead and take Goatless call. We're getting down to the nitty gritty.
Yes,
Masters Cup is coming up next.
Game time, baby.
Fuck a dog. I can't wait to hear his intro. He's gonna be like, somewhere in Australia, calling on like a mobile phone. It's like, it sounds like he's always in a completely different spot.
Call back, Goatlust. What are you doing? There he is. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Inside the Game. Goatlust, what's up, man? How's it going?
Oh, yeah, not a lot, mate.
Good deal.
How are you fellas going?
Good.
Good, man.
Oh, yeah?
Pretty good.
Just had a good,
a bit of that D3, eh?
Oh, yeah? Are you playing?
Certainly.
Oh, well, I just about fucked myself with those monsters, eh?
Right.
Non-stop, right?
I got about halfway through Act 2 after, like, 20 straight hours, and then I was just like, I can't click on any more monsters.
Yeah.
So I just can't click anymore, I'm sorry.
When you were saying that, I was imagining, like, a really well-done commercial with, like, top pro gamers said, after 20 hours, they just couldn't click on any more monsters. Pages are, like, in the background going,
just can't do it anymore,
there's
man.
So many of the monsters.
All right, let's
this back.
So you played nonstop then, right? Because you guys launched first.
Actually, I was like, I might go to bed at, like, 3 o'clock, seeing as my mate got fucked over. He couldn't really play. He fucked his install, something rotten. He tried for 3 hours to get it to work. But,
wow.
Yeah, so I decided to go to bed at 3. But it turns out if you've had a few monsters, it's not not really the best.
And it's one of the many powers it instills upon you.
They do say energy on them quite often.
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
Just keep that in mind.
And then I sort of fucking woke up at 7:30 and I'm like, oh, fuck.
I gotta play Diablo. Call it works.
I gotta play some fucking Diablo. Yeah, yeah. All right.
All right. Lay it out there.
I've actually been directing my questions elsewhere for a long time, but I thought I might go back to the tried and true and ask the man himself, Greg, a question. Just how are you feeling, you know, going into this tournament this weekend? Because obviously you've had this, you know, string of pretty bad results, or, you know, bad results for a player like you. We used to talk about you having a terrible tournament when you got fucking fifth. But is there a particular issue you've identified or something like that?
No, I just kind of suck now. I don't know. It's not looking too good.
So, do you think you've gotten worse compared to your old form, or do you think everyone else has just sort of caught up to you back in the day?
I don't know. I still feel like I play reasonably well. I just lose everything, so I guess everyone else has caught up.
Do you, Idri, you've recently gone through, like, some game changes as well. Is that accurate, or... I mean, you're constantly going through game changes, but for any gamer who plays specific styles, trying to change up styles is pretty difficult, right? Have you been going through anything like that lately?
I've been playing the Infestor stuff for quite a while, ZVT. So yeah, it was a switch, and I think Mutas fit my style better, but Mutas just aren't good enough anymore. Terrans have gotten too good at dealing with it. And ZVP, yeah, I'm still trying a bunch of different stuff, because I haven't found anything I really like.
So you think there's light at the end of the tunnel?
I've got a personal question. Seriously.
Do you want to is there light at the end of the tunnel?
I mean, I don't know. Hopefully. We'll see.
Ironically, with the answer that hopefully there is.
Yes.
And being asked if there is hope, and he says there's hope. I think that means there's hope.
I don't know. I mean, you and I have talked about this, like, pre- and post-EG Masters Cup casts. I'm curious, like, what your stance is on early leaves and in situations where, like, I feel like you're probably down, but certainly not out, and it seems like maybe it's, like, compounded at this point. Like, you'll get, like, a small disadvantage and just be like, fuck it, and just bounce in certain games.
I find the game really frustrating, and I don't care that much anymore. So, yeah, I live too early a lot.
For sure. That answers that.
All right. Goatlust.
All right.
Thank you.
Oh, all right.
Mission accomplished, Goatlust.
I might end it on a bit of a lighter note then, eh?
Okay.
I'll ask you guys a quick question then. Who do you think's going to be better, Jadon or Bisou? Who do you reckon's going to do better in SC2?
God, I actually have no fucking clue. Because honestly, I just think there's so much more to mechanics. And as easy as it might be to be like, but they're a god in the game. Like, I'm not convinced that anyone's just going to be able to pick up and play and suddenly they're just going to be awesome. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Bisou and Jadon have really similar strengths. They're both very, very mechanical. And I mean, obviously smart, but they're not good because of their decision making. I can see them being pretty similar. It depends on what races they choose.
Yeah, well, that'll probably be the biggest thing, won't it?
yeah, and that's probably going to be one of the most interesting things to come out of the Pro League, to be honest with you. So, let's see. So, all right, hey, Goatless, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
All right, yeah, right, I'm pulling for you, Greg. So, fucking keep up the good work, man.
Thank you.
All right. Sometimes our biggest fans are the hardest on us, I guess. So let's we got to wrap up. We got the Masters Cup coming up next. I believe that Isaac is actually solo casting tonight.
Yep.
Bless his heart, man. War. That's a rough thing to do.
It's tough.
It is
tough. I like solo casting.
It is tough. Really?
I mean, I think there's, like, positives and negatives for sure.
Depends on what kind of guy you are. I feel like that there's always, like... There's so much shit to talk about in a StarCraft game.
I totally agree. I just love bouncing ideas off a co-caster, because you
like
can HD. Get really...
Yeah.
Oh. I mean, yeah, I like bouncing ideas off of my co-caster, whoever it may be. It's you can sometimes get more in depth if they're like on point with you, and you can kind of juggle ideas back and forth because it brings new perspective.
Jeff likes to talk to himself. That's why he likes to solo cast.
I just like to talk. Yeah,
solo casting's tough, man.
Jeff,
I mean,
what do you think? Well, that was a great point, first off, Jeff. But before I go into it, let me just compliment you that I really like the shirt you're wearing today. By the way, oh God, thank you. I'm gonna make you. Dinner later for that comment.
I'll be damned. Gosh. And I might even just go ahead and do a sexual favor for you.
All right, guys, we got to wrap up. We got the basketball coming up next. X6 Pain User, I start with you.
Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Big shout outs to my team, Check 6, and our sponsor, main sponsor, TT Esports. Please follow me on Twitter at Pain User, and see you guys next week. Or actually, I'll see you guys tomorrow on Masters Cup, but yeah. See you next week.
That's true. Greg?
Here's specific where you'll see us.
Yeah. Follow me on Twitter at Idrajit, IDRAJIT. Streaming on idrajit.tv. I'll usually tweet when I'm going to stream. And then thanks to EG and all our sponsors, Intel, SteelSeries, Monster, Kingston, HyperX, Beyond Gaming, and Sapphire. Big thank you to all of them.
And in control?
Same as Greg. Same team. Love them. Thank you, guys. Anaheim, do check it out. We're all going to be there shortly thereafter. It'll be DreamHack Summer, where you can see a lot of us again. Please do, for our European fans, check out DreamHack Summer. It's going to be amazing. For me personally, I've been streaming a lot on Twitch, so In Control TV there. Follow me on Twitter, EG In Control. Thank you guys for your support. Appreciate it. We had a lot of really good discussions on here. Trolls, if I were to rate it, pretty good and entertaining, but I got to say...
I think that we win the Troll Award for
that's
tonight.
What I'm saying.
Yeah.
I think if you were to take the trolls by themselves, it would have been extremely awkward and very lackluster, but with our performance, if I could say
exactly.
So myself,
exactly.
I think it made it into a good thing. So if you're out there, you're unsure about yourself, you're insecure, you're like sub-17 years old and you want to troll us, make sure we are on our A game if you're going to do that. So
yeah.
Watch the show, kind of feel it out. Are we making good jokes? Are we vibing? Do we have energy? If that's the case, I want you to call up with your inverted balls and make the most like awkward and just like deliciously like uncoordinated attempt at trying to be funny, because then we're going to slaughter the shit out of you. And in doing so, we're going to make it really funny. And then if you can create that scenario for us, I appreciate it, because honestly, it's really hard to win at StarCraft, but it's fucking easy clowning on you, douchebag.
Boom. Oh. Boom! Dude, I'm not even going to say shit, man. In Control said it all. Follow me on Twitter, DJ Wheat. No, we'll see you guys next week. Tomorrow night we've got, of course, Live on 3 and the Masters Cup. Tonight and tomorrow I'll be casting the EG match with Pain User, so tune into that. And we'll see you this weekend for MLG Spring Arena and the GSL Finals. Hope you guys will tune in. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time. Blowing you up. Peace. We're out of here.
Peace.